You're listening to Everybody Pulls the Tarp, the go-to podcast for high performers. I'm Andrew Moses. Each week, you'll hear my thought-provoking conversations with Olympians, pro athletes, CEOs, elite coaches, best-selling authors, and other high performers to uncover their secrets to success. Get ready to be inspired each week when we talk about leadership, teamwork, work ethic, and more. Are you ready? Let's go. Hi, everyone. This week's guest is the entrepreneur behind a product Time Magazine recently named one of the best inventions of 2021. His name is Chris Kanick, and he's the CEO and founder of Smart Cups, a technology company that created the world's first printed beverage. Son of immigrant parents, Chris grew up with limited financial means, but with an unmatched creative and entrepreneurial spirit. He took his first chemistry class at age 10 and started working in a research lab when he was just 12 years old. A few years later, his career took a big pivot to an unexpected place, stand-up comedy. Chris spent 7 years as a stand-up comedian and performed at many of the top comedy clubs across the United States. He won the 2007 New York Comedy Festival and has appeared on VH1, MTV, and more. Today, Chris says his experience as a comedian makes him a better CEO. His story is a powerful example of what's possible when you push your limits, work hard, and step outside your comfort zone. So, let's pull the tarp and get straight to my conversation with Chris Kanick. Tell my listeners, what are Smart Cups?
Smart Cups is a sustainability technology solution. What we have is a patented printing delivery system that allows for the printing of active and flavor materials on the surface of substrates. The technology was developed initially as a drug delivery system for patients who suffer from dysphagia, elderly and children. So we can print the actual medications inside of a cup, and so they could swallow them better than tablets. But I commercialized it in the beverage industry sort of as a proof of concept to get it into the market. And so we can print an actual beverage inside of a cup. The cup looks empty. They're stackable, lightweight, right? You add water, and a few seconds after that, you have the beverage of your choice. But the same applies to a number of different categories. We sell currently an energy drink off of our website, smartcups.com, and on Amazon. But we're not an energy drink company. We're not a cup company. And so we have the ability to move into a number of different categories with a number of different applications. I tell people all the time, walk through a grocery store and anything that you see in liquid form, we can print. And so anything, personal hygiene products like mouthwash, soaps, shampoos, toothpaste, barbecue sauce, eggs. We're working on a project right now, for example, where we take powdered eggs and we can print them inside of a vessel, fortify them with micronutrients, add some flavoring components, and now you have a nutritious egg product. And now you might ask, who would eat that? Powdered eggs is actually highly in demand outside the United States in areas where refrigeration is an issue. And so by providing an instant egg product that's nutritious and fortified with micronutrients, we have a product that could potentially help cause a dent in our world hunger issues and provide nutrients for people that are deficient. For example, folic acid or calcium. Other applications that we have, you know, we've printed pharmaceutical actives, and we have some projects in the pipeline. And so you look at the technology and you think, you know, so what's the innate benefit of it? So it's a reduction of storage and transportation requirements that leads to a reduction of carbon emissions. When we started this, when Smart Cups came out to the public, I was looking at data, and there's so much data around the environment and, you know, what plastics does to the environment, what carbon emissions does to the environment, but there really wasn't any data around what liquid transportation does on our environment. We've spent so much over the last, I would say, 100 years creating infrastructure to provide water around the globe. You know, why do we continue to transport liquid? And so I partnered with UCLA's Institute of Environment and Sustainability. They did a little project, and the data should be published here in the next couple months, where they looked at Smart Cups technology and they looked at the impact the technology would have on the environment. What they found was a 600% decrease in transportation requirements that would result in a 40-fold decrease in carbon emissions. And so they looked at, hey, what does it take to ship tequila bottles, for example? What does it take to ship mouthwash bottles? What does it take to ship traditional bottles and cans? And so to give you a visual representation of that, think about the truck that once could only deliver 96,000 units of a 12-ounce can. If we looked at smart cups, that same truck can deliver 1.2 million or more of the very same product because of smart cups technology. And so the concept of getting more resources to more people with using less resources is really what we're talking about.
Can you remember like an initial aha moment when you knew that this was going to be a big idea?
I was at a Knicks-Lakers game and at the Staples Center and after the game, and I showed the technology to a couple players, and I wish I had a camera on me because it was pretty fucking crazy. I'll say that, because it was like, I won't say their names, but they were like, damn, shit, that's some straight up David Blaine shit, you know? And I was like, all right, if I could get these guys who are probably pretty jaded because they see all sorts of shit, you know, excited about this, then I think I've got something here. I met with one of the most storied NFL franchises, and I went to their facility. I met with the head of food and beverage over there and showed them a cup. You know, I put their logo at the bottom of the cup. We could take the actual ingredients and print a logo. So we printed their logo at the bottom of the cup, and I put the cups out at the table, and they all look like cavemen looking at fire for the first time. And they were like, what the hell is this? And I was like, yeah, just add water. And so they added water, and it was like, holy shit. Those are pretty cool moments. But I would say every day, for the most part, is a grind. Every day is moving projects, overcoming obstacles, and trying to find solutions to problems that have never existed before.
Have you always wanted to be an entrepreneur?
No. As a kid, I never thought that I would own my own business. I never thought I'd have my own employees. I never had that in my mind. I thought I was going to be a scientist, get a PhD, probably go to law school. That's what I thought I was going to end up doing with my life. And one thing led to another in my life and my path. And because things aren't linear, right? So, you know, I started college when I was very young. I took my first college chemistry class very young. I started working in a lab when I was 12, continued to work throughout my teenage years doing different research projects, and was an American Chemical Society scholar. And in college, when I was of the right age to be in college, I decided I wasn't really living my life. By that time, I had been doing research for about 8 years. And I was like, I don't want to do this shit anymore. So I decided I was going to be a stand-up comic. So I was a stand-up comic for about 7 years. And it was fun. I got to meet a lot of people, toured around, did TV, wrote some scripts. That's what brought me to Southern California. And then in 2011, I'm at a Taco Tuesday. Waitress isn't coming fast enough with my margarita. I had a glass of water on the table. And I said, why hasn't anybody come up with powdered alcohol? I took a napkin, started drawing out a protocol. The next day, I took a bottle of Everclear, some maltodextrin. I created this crudest spray dryer on the planet with a frying pan and some coffee filters, some paper clips. I blew up my kitchen while my three-year-old was watching SpongeBob, but I was successful at creating three different flavors of powdered alcohol. And then that's when it just all kind of just snowballed. One thing led to another, led to another, led to another. And here I am today. I have a staff of close to 11, 12 people now in a 23,000 square foot facility. All state of the art, never before created equipment. And we're engaged in projects with some of the largest companies on the planet.
You mentioned there, you know, doing a lot of things at a very early age that maybe most wouldn't. You know, I know you took your first chemistry class at 10. You talked about, you know, getting involved with serious lab research at the age of 12. Did you ever run into folks that, you know, were curious why this young kid was hanging around older people, or did people doubt your abilities or think you shouldn't have been there?
Yeah. And people, I'm not your conventional chemist. You know, I curse like a sailor. And, you know, I was a stand-up comic for a number of years where, you know, fart and dick jokes was how I got a reaction out of people. I would say even today, people still don't get the technology. They don't understand the benefit. So I always operate with a chip on my shoulder. I'm a poor kid. I grew up in a shitty part of New Jersey. Neither one of my parents went to college, both immigrants, grew up poor, but I went to all the best schools and I was fortunate enough and I was gifted enough and some teachers saw something in me and I went through this program. I will tell you this funny story. You know, I'm a big wrestling fan, huge wrestling fan. If you looked at my office, it looks like a comic book shop, right? And I'm 12 years old and there used to be a McDonald's in New Jersey that would do autograph signings before WWF shows. And this particular weekend, The Rock was there. But it was before he was The Rock, right? Like, nobody really gave two shits about this guy. He's wearing a black turtleneck. He's wearing a fanny pack, leather jacket, right? He's got the curly hair up top. You know, he's like probably in his like early 20s. I'm 12 years old. And I walk up and I just get an autograph. And he's like, "You're going to come to the show later?" And I said, "Well, I got homework to do." And he's like, "Ah, screw the homework. You know, come to the show. Tell your parents to take you to the show." And I'm like, it's not that kind of homework. I'm kind of in college and I'm doing, you know, and I kind of have that. And he looked at me and he goes, "You're one of those kids." I said, "Yeah, I guess I'm one of those kids. But I love you." That was what I said. And he goes, "You know what? Forget the show. Stay in school. Don't take bumps to the head like I do." And that always resonated with me for a long period of time because it was like, shit, like here's a person that I idolize, but he in a lot of ways probably wishes he didn't have to take bumps to the head, you know? And so let me just stay on this course. And for me, I said this to somebody recently because I just came to this realization. It's like science for me is no different than like football or basketball for a kid from the inner city. It's just like a means to an end and a way for me to get out of the living situation that I was in. It's crazy to think about that because you're thinking of, you know, something so technical and so specialized that not very many people, you don't hear a lot of scientists say that. Oh yeah, science is just a means to an end, you know, a way for me to get out of a shitty life. But that's how I see it.
Besides obviously your talent and gifts personally, what else went into getting you the access to the schools and programs that you needed to challenge yourself and be successful? Were your parents driving you all over New Jersey to different places? Were teachers mentoring you? What were some of the things that were playing a role in accelerating your success?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, a teacher in the fifth grade just came to my mom one day and gave her a course catalog and said, "We think your son is a candidate for this program that they do." And they gave me the course catalog and they said, you know, just pick whatever you want. Pick whatever interests you, right? And I like MacGyver and I want to learn how to blow shit up. So I picked chemistry. I could have picked fucking basket weaving. Who knows? I'd probably be a basket weaving prodigy. But I picked chemistry. And from there, you know, my parents, they understood the value of education. They understood that it was a good thing for me to be doing all these things. And then from there, a lady named Nadia McCarr, who was at the local high school in the town that I lived in, she had heard about me and she begged my mom to send me to school in the city as opposed to busing me or driving me outside of the city to a private school. And it wasn't until high school, you know, she helped get me the research position when I was 12 years old. She helped me get the research position when I was 14. She helped me get, you know, get on the team that was a NASA-funded team working on biologically based nanorobots. She helped me along the way because she believed in me. And she was like, you know, you've got a drive and a passion that I've never seen before. And you're just one of the smartest kids that I've ever seen. And I was like, you know, it was at the moment, you know, when you're a child and everybody's calling you a genius, you start to develop a little bit of an ego, right? You're like, you know, your mom comes to you and is like, "Hey, clean your room." You're like, "Fuck you. I'm not cleaning my room." You know, I'm a genius. But a lot of things changed over time. You know, now I'm 38. It's funny because somebody wrote a bio about me and they said 10 years of experience. And what they were taking into account was the Smart Cups. I started doing the math and I was like, holy shit, I got more than 25 years at this bullshit. You know, that's like somebody's watch and pat on the back. I'm like, holy shit, like I'm in my twilight years career-wise, when I look at it in, from that perspective. But, you know, things have changed. I'm not a kid anymore. People still think of me as like the child genius. They still refer to me as like the child genius. And I'm like, dude, I'm not a fucking child genius. I'm just a schmuck trying to make a buck. I got three kids, a wife, and diapers ain't cheap. I've lived a very fortunate life and it's been a lot of hard work, but very blessed.
What's interesting there is, and we talk about it a lot on this show, Chris, is that no matter how talented you are, any individual, individuals need people around them to care enough about them and see enough in them to help them along on their journey. And it's really no different with you. You mentioned a few names, a few different people who really poured themselves, heart and soul, into you, saw your potential, saw maybe some of the challenges that you were facing because of the socioeconomic situation you were in, and they helped create opportunities. But then you walk through the doors that they open for you. There's plenty of people who don't walk through the doors that get open for them, and that's really commendable. I'm curious, I want to go back to the comedy. You talked about you were a stand-up comic for 7 years. I'm curious, are there things from your days as a comic that you learned and developed, skills you developed that serve you well as an entrepreneur and CEO? Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, you know, when I started this, I was very technical. And I realized very quickly, there are a lot of smart people on this planet with a lot of innovative ideas, and they never go anywhere because they're not presented properly. And there's no vision behind, you know, what the innovation has behind it. So the things that I learned from stand-up is how to keep people interested, how to be a good storyteller. When you're in a room with, let's say, the C-suite of a multinational company, and they're going through the same monotonous bullshit day in and day out, you know, the corporate speak, and I come in there and I start telling jokes or I curse a little bit to break the ice, and it makes people feel, it's like crowd work. It's like I'm doing crowd work every time I go into a meeting with some company or a group of investors, or being able to read who I'm talking to and be able to, when I could see their interest being lost and then bringing them back to be engaged. That's a skill that I learned while doing stand-up. You know, when you're on stage, it's just you versus the fucking crowd. They give you maybe like 30 seconds of like grace. It's like, all right, this guy came on stage, now make us fucking laugh. You can lose them while, you know, somebody's got to go to the bathroom. Somebody has to pee. Somebody's thinking about their bills, you know. So you got to keep them engaged in the story that you're telling them.
How do you do that? How do you identify in any aspect of life where communication and storytelling is so critical? What are the indications to you that people have lost interest? And then how do you quickly grab that interest back?
I base it off of body language. I prefer doing face-to-face meetings as opposed to phone meetings. This whole Zoom thing, I can't stand it, right? I like doing face-to-face because I like to look at people's eyes. If I see their eyes start wandering, I go, okay, time to switch. You know, talk about something else. Get their attention. And I think that comes from survival mode, an adaptation mechanism that's just built in me from growing up where I grew up. It's like something's not working. Okay, go to the next thing. You know, because I'm thinking about how am I going to survive in this conversation? What's my end objective? What am I trying to get out of this meeting? If I don't get it, you know, if I'm not getting it with this approach, let's move over here. You know, if their body language, they don't want to be there. You know, maybe they got into a fight with their wife before they came to meet with me. You know, there's a million fucking things that could fucking happen that could derail somebody's attention. And I'm always trying to get them back. So
how do you get them back?
Enthusiasm. Trying to find that connection. What are they going to be interested in that's going to get me their attention to get them to truly understand what it is that I'm saying? To absorb, because I would say 98% of the time, people are listening to you. They're hearing you, but they're not listening. They're not really absorbing what it is that you're saying. And it always comes up when follow-up questions. Oh, what about this? Well, if you were fucking listening before, you know, and I've done that in a lot of meetings. And I'm like, well, if you were listening before, if you were fucking listening, you know, I throw in the fucking because now it catches their attention. And now they're like, oh shit, this guy's on top of his shit. I better really fucking pay attention and not ask a stupid question that shows that I'm not listening, you know? So a lot of little tactics here and there, but primarily it's, I'm entertaining. As the CEO and as the face of this technology, I'm entertaining people on a daily basis, whether it's motivating my employees, motivating a vendor to get me supplies on a timely fashion. I'm constantly entertaining.
The role of storytelling and entertainment can't be understated in success, and I think in any aspect of life. Chris, you talked about your team a little bit there. You referenced them as well earlier. I read a story about you at the beginning of the pandemic. At the beginning of the pandemic, there were people who were suggesting that you lay off some of your employees because they were deemed non-essential. And instead of laying them off, your question was, what can we do to make their jobs essential? Talk about that for a moment and your mindset and how you went about doing that. There's something really special there.
Let's just backtrack for a second and just say that SmartCups really came out of me just trying to find a job for myself, right? And it's just, you know, my comedy career goes to shit. I moved to California. I don't even know how to drive. Guy from back east, and I moved to Southern California. And I'm always trying to find a way to survive. And so I come up with this crazy idea, and I talk people into, like, my COO is one of my best friends. And I talk these people into coming to work for me and share in my passion, which they do. Everybody here shares my passion. My COO is one of the smartest guys I've ever fucking met and a guy that I trust my life with, right? I get brought into a meeting. It was right after the shelter in place. And there's like, yeah, we're not essential. We got to be furloughed. If not, we could be fined and this and that. And I said, fuck that shit, because my loyalty is to the people who share in my fucking passion. And I go, there's no fucking way I'm going to fucking lay off people. And people are going to be jobless through this very fucking crazy bullshit time. And so I was like, I was walking through a Trader Joe's and I saw them handing out hand sanitizer. I said, you know what? We're going to make hand sanitizer. We technically have a distillery permit and we have access to ethanol. Let's do it the right way. So within 24 hours, we got approval from the FDA. In 24 hours, we had a hand sanitizer business. It allowed us to continue making smart cups, continue on with our innovation, continue working towards developing the technology while manufacturing hand sanitizer and keeping everybody employed. So nobody had that uncertain craziness of, you know, do I still have a job? Is this place still going to be around? And so we were able, and not only was I able to keep people employed, but I was able to help most of Orange County, you know, supplying hand sanitizer to first responders, hospitals, municipalities, schools, homeless shelters. So it was a good thing.
Besides your passion, do you think that your loyalty that your team members see in you, the people that work for you see in you, do you think that motivates them to provide even harder work, brighter ideas? Do you think that that loyalty and that passion gets them going a little bit more?
I think so. I think people are willing to go the extra mile because they see that I wake up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning to start working. They see that I'm like running around like a chicken without a head. That sets the standard. You know, if I was a lazy guy and I was just strolling in and, you know, taking breaks and drinking Starbucks and shit like that, it'd be different, but I'm involved. I'm all over the place. I wake up early, go to sleep late, and that's just the way I run. And I think that pushes everybody else to be like, oh shit, okay, let's follow that person's lead, right? And it's not for everybody. You know, startup life is not for everybody. And that's what we were for the first 3 years, at startup. You know, it's not everybody's cup of tea.
I think there's so much, Chris, that everybody can learn from your story, whether you're running a startup, whether you're battling some adversity, whether you're trying to reinvent yourself and use the skills from other aspects of your life to put them together. Your story is so fantastic. You said you're 38, but I feel like you've been at this, you said 25 something years. You're still just, you're in chapter one. Yeah. I mean, this is so cool in many ways, Chris. And I can't wait to continue to follow your story and see everything that you and Smart Cups accomplish. Keep pulling the tarp, keep doing everything that you're doing. And we'll have to catch up again sometime. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me this week. Be sure to subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you can catch all of our upcoming episodes. And if you are like me and want a world full of tarp pullers, then leave a review to help others find us. You can also follow me on Instagram at AndrewMoses123 and sign up for my monthly email newsletter at everybodypullsthetarp.com/newsletter. I'll share tips and insights to help you achieve maximum success and happiness. Today is a great day to pull the tarp. I am rooting for you. See you next time.